Hey, this is John Lee Dumas from EO Fire, and you're listening to Elective Rotation with Pharmacy Joe. You must be prepared to ignite.
What's up, Pharmacy Nation? I'm Pharmacy Joe. Thank you for listening to The Elective Rotation, a critical care pharmacy podcast. This is episode 15, Pharmacist Role and Expectation During Endotracheal Intubation. If you find this podcast helpful, please tell a friend or colleague or go to pharmacyjoe.com/iTunes to leave a review. You can find the show notes for today's episode at pharmacyjoe.com/episode15. If one of us is not already at the bedside, pharmacists at my institution are frequently called by critical care providers to assist with intubation procedures in critically ill patients. This episode will provide a review of the pharmacist's role and expectations during intubation of critically ill patients. We'll cover the following six scenarios in this episode. Number one, crash airway. Number two, rapid sequence intubation. Number three, delayed sequence intubation. Number four, difficult airway predicted. Number five, awake airway. Number six, failed airway. I treat these scenarios similar to code blue and rapid response calls in that I am focused on identifying and predicting patient and provider needs and preparing in advance to meet those needs. Let's dive in. First, the crash airway. A crash airway exists when the patient is in cardiac or respiratory arrest or is otherwise near death. Endotracheal intubation is attempted first without medications. If this is not successful because the patient is not relaxed, then a single dose of a paralytic, usually succinylcholine, may be given. In this case, use a little bit higher than the normal rapid sequence intubation dose at 2 milligrams per kilo. I call this the go big or go home dosing strategy. Next, rapid sequence intubation. RSI is established as the best way to ensure airway placement success in the absence of a difficult airway. There have been many studies on this. I've got one of the largest ones linked up in the show notes. RSI is described as occurring in seven phases. Preparation, pre-oxygenation, pre-treatment, paralysis with induction, positioning, placement, and post-intubation. We're going to go over each phase. The preparation phase. In this phase, the first thing I do is identify the provider's preference for medications, and I will make suggestions on what to use if I see a reason to do so. A general rule of thumb I use is to obtain double the amount of medication the physician says they want. Nothing is worse than having to run to the med room to get more induction agent after the procedure has started. I use tape to label the syringes as it's always in my pocket or available on the unit. Next, the pre-oxygenation phase. Pre-oxygenation is critical to maximize the safe apnea time for the patient. This is the time the provider has to place the airway after the patient stops breathing and before their O2 saturation drops to dangerous levels. This may be 8 minutes for a healthy adult or less than 4 minutes for a critically ill or obese adult. In this phase, there's not much for the pharmacist to do, so I continue with preparing and labeling if needed. If I have time, I lay several blank pieces of tape out on a table so that I have labels ready to go should additional drugs be called for. Next, the pre-treatment phase. In the ICU, I'm rarely using these pre-treatment methods, but I include them here as they're more common in the emergency department. Pre-treatment involves giving lidocaine and/or fentanyl to prevent known complications of intubation in at-risk patients. There are three main reasons to use pre-treatment. First, reactive airway disease. In this case, give lidocaine 1.5 milligrams per kilogram IV to prevent bronchospasm. Second, elevated intracranial pressure. Give lidocaine 1.5 milligrams per kilogram IV to mitigate increased intracranial pressure from airway manipulation, and give fentanyl 3 mics per kilo IV to mitigate catecholamine surge from the pain due to intubation. The third reason to use pretreatment is a cardiovascular or other condition when an acute rise in the blood pressure or heart rate must be avoided. In this case, give fentanyl 3 mics per kilogram IV to mitigate catecholamine surge from the pain due to intubation. The next phase, paralyze plus induction. Now, this is supposed to occur simultaneously, but it's usually given sequentially through the same IV line. I prefer the induction medication be given first in case something happens to that IV line. Let's go over the paralytics and induction agents that are commonly used in RSI. In my view, there are two realistic options for paralytics, and that's either going to be succinylcholine at 1.5 milligrams per kilo IV or rocuronium at 1.2 milligrams per kilo IV. If you haven't heard episode 14 yet, where I discuss these two options head to head, be sure to check it out. I've got it linked up in the show notes, or you can go to pharmacyjoe.com/episode14. For induction agents, I consider there to be three realistic options. The first, propofol, the dose would be 1.5 milligrams per kilo IV. I think this is a fine choice if the patient's not very sick and has a very good cardiovascular reserve. Expect it to cause some hypotension and bradycardia, more so the sicker the patient is. The second induction option is ketamine. The dose here is also 1.5 milligrams per kilo IV. I think this is the best choice to use if the patient is very sick or hemodynamically unstable. Remember, ketamine is an on-off induction agent and should be subjected to the go-big or go-home dosing strategy. The third option, etomidate, is given 0.3 milligrams per kilo IV. Use this option if the patient is sick, hemodynamically unstable, and the provider is not familiar with ketamine. It's tough to go wrong with etomidate. Expect this to be hemodynamically neutral. Some providers think even one dose of etomidate can cause adrenal insufficiency and increase mortality, but I agree with the authors of Rosen's Emergency Medicine and the Cochrane reviewers that this is not likely a concern. Now, a little note on dosing. No patient was ever hurt by rounding up the dose for any RSI medication. The consequences of too little medication far outweigh the consequences of too much in this scenario, so don't be stingy with your dosing. The next phase is positioning. The patient is positioned for intubation. Paralyzing the patient before they're in position for intubation does make me nervous, but this is where the experts put it in the algorithms. Next is placement, and this is placement of the endotracheal tube. During this phase, I watch and listen for patient or provider needs, such as an unexpected difficult airway, hemodynamic changes, or inadequate sedation or paralysis. And the last phase is post-intubation management. While the rest of the care team is confirming tube placement and gas exchange, I believe the pharmacist should be immediately focused on the continued sedation and comfort of the patient. Obtaining continuous sedation infusions can be time-consuming, so I am usually asking for some midazolam. I dose at least 0.05 milligrams per kilo, and fentanyl, dosed at least 1 mic per kilo, as a bolus to be given while the continuous sedation regimen is selected and obtained. Hypotension often occurs following emergency intubation. Now, this happens because venous return is reduced by the positive pressure in the intrathoracic cavity that the ventilator induces. The initial treatment for this is saline or lactated ringers as an IV bolus, and that is followed up by a norepinephrine infusion if the patient doesn't respond to the fluid bolus. Now, while push-dose pressors are tempting to use, Like I talked about in episode 4, I consider this unnecessary if the pharmacist has had time to properly prepare ahead of time with a liter of saline, a bag of norepinephrine, IV tubing, and 2 IV pumps in the room. Next, we'll talk about delayed sequence intubation, or DSI. Now, DSI is proposed by some for when the patient can't tolerate pre-oxygenation, and this is usually due to agitation. DSI is essentially procedural sedation with 1.5 milligrams per kilo IV ketamine so that the patient can tolerate the quote-unquote procedure of pre-oxygenation. RSI then proceeds when pre-oxygenation is complete. Ketamine is chosen because the patient will be sedated but maintain respirations with this drug. A criticism of DSI by some is that it is not well studied and only has case series and case reports to support its use. The technique is about as well studied as parachute use to prevent death and major trauma from gravitational challenge. Like I mentioned in episode 1, I'll take the parachute anytime. The next scenario we'll cover is when a difficult airway is predicted. Now, predicting a difficult airway is not necessary for a pharmacist, but knowledge of how to do so can be obtained by reviewing Rosen's Emergency Medicine, the first chapter on airway management, or any number of other resources you might find. In this setting, the patient may be sedated more like a procedural sedation without the use of paralytics. Induction agents may be titrated instead of given as a single bolus, and the patient may only reach a moderate or deep level of sedation. At my institution, a glide scope is always going to be used for a difficult airway when it's predicted. And it seems a majority of the airways placed in my medical surgical community ICU appear to fall under this category, with paralytics being withheld and sedatives often titrated rather than given as a single large bolus. I'd love to hear from other critical care pharmacists whether you find the provider withholding paralytics often during intubation in the ICU. Send an email to joe@pharmacyjoe.com and let me know. The next scenario is an awake airway, where the patient has an attempt at airway placement without sedation. I can only remember an awake fiber optic intubation once. It was in an obese patient with a myasthenia crisis. After several failed attempts, we administered a 1 mic per kilo IV bolus over 10 minutes of dexmedetomidine, and the patient was successfully intubated. Last, we'll cover the failed airway. A failed airway exists when further attempts at endotracheal intubation are unlikely to be successful. A laryngeal mask airway or cricothyrotomy may be attempted in this case. Other than possibly obtaining local anesthetic for use in the cricothyrotomy, the role of the pharmacist in this scenario is to make preparations to treat the patient should they go into a cardiac arrest. If you're interested, I've got linked in the show notes an amazing video and analysis of what is called an elective cricothyrotomy in a pericardiac arrest patient who could not be endotracheally intubated because their jaw was wired shut. I'd like to add a note on obese patients. I recently listened to the podcast Emergency Medicine Cases, their episode 69. I've got it linked up in the show notes. And they discuss in depth the emergency management of obese patients. Now, there's a lot of information in that episode about airway management and drug dosing in obese patients, and I would highly recommend you listen to it. Do you have any stories to share or questions to ask about assisting with intubation? I'd love to hear from you. Send me an email, joe@pharmacyjoe.com, or tweet using the hashtag RxJ15. And thank you for your iTunes reviews. Your written iTunes reviews encourage me and they help other people find the podcast. If you appreciate the pharmacy information that I share, please write your own review on iTunes by going to pharmacyjoe.com/iTunes. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you in the next episode of the Elective Rotation.